This episode is brought to you by Uptown Beer Society, a craft beer gang dedicated to making memorable collaborations with New York City brands and breweries owned by people of color. Learn more on Instagram at Uptown Beer Society.
This week on Meetin' 3, we head into the second part of our mini-series on global trade, where we talk about all things sweet, from chocolate and sugarcane to the cultural festival that accompanied the growth of the date industry in the U.S.
They're using this romance and fantasy to say, dates are exotic and you should consume them.
I'd like to think of the food that we eat as archaeological artifacts, in part because the history of humanity is in the stands in your produce market.
It's not like other foods. We have very personal feelings about chocolate.
Tune in to Meetin' 3, HRN's weekly food news roundup, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Life's a Banquet, a show about the highs and lows of all things edible, spreadable, pourable, and chuggable with your host, Orson Welles, and...
and Rosebud.
Oh, well, hello. How's it going, mine friend?
It's going fine. It's snowing here.
Get the hell out of here.
Oh, yeah. Snowing sideways.
Snowing in the center of the earth. I didn't know you guys got snow in there. So interesting.
Oh, yeah. We're nowhere near the equator or the center of the earth. We're not even in the center of the United States.
And then what are you good for anyway?
Nothing.
So, Nicole, I want to tell you that I have a new boyfriend.
Oh, okay.
And I thought I would take this time on the podcast to tell you because I know everyone's really excited to hear about my love life. He's younger than me, a lot younger. And he's also smaller than me. And he's a puppy named Butter.
You got a dog?
No, but there is a puppy that lives on my block. We've had two dates, one yesterday and another today.
Oh, you guys don't live together.
We don't, no. Not yet. I am planning on stealing him from his owner.
What kind of dog is he?
Butter! He is... Okay, so first I'll tell you about his appearance, and then I'll tell you about our dates. So...
Okay.
Butter is... He looks like he could be maybe like a golden retriever or like a yellow lab puppy, but his owner says he's a mutt, which makes him even cooler. Mm-hmm. And yesterday I was walking down the street, and... like this little adorable puppy. I mean, he's a baby puppy. Like, he's quite tiny.
Aww.
And he did the kind of thing where, like, when a puppy sees another, or a dog sees another dog, they like bow down and freeze and stay perfectly still.
Yes.
But he did it to me. And so I look behind me and I'm like, then I turn to him and I go, who, me? he was like lowering himself for me. And then I approached him and he pounced on me.
That's so cute.
I pet him and he bit my hand like a puppy does. And then today I randomly went out for coffee, which I almost never do at like 3 p.m. And there, lo and behold, is Butter again with his owner, who I was like, you again. And the owner was like, and I was like, bitch, I'm sorry if you're a listener, Butter's owner, but I'm not sure you deserve Butter.
So she's uncomfortable by your close relationship with her son.
She's threatened. Yes.
Yeah. I understand all the time with dogs and the owners. I completely ignore if I can. I just hang out with the dog usually.
I was like, Butter is cool. And she's like, yes, Butter is cool. I was like, listen, lady, don't name your fucking dog Butter and have it be so cute and not expect me to fall madly in love with it and plot your murder and the theft of your dog.
Yeah, there were these people that came to my old restaurant that had a tiny, 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 tiny Yorkie that weighed like 0.3 pounds. And his name was Dude.
And that's cute.
I know, but I feel like they were not as cool as their dog. Like, I would always be like, oh my God, Dude's here. I'm so excited. Let's hang out. I love you. Let's get married. And they would just be like, okay, whatever. And just like... don't name your dog Dude, and don't get a dog that's 0.5 pounds.
Exactly. They should be arrested.
They can't even jump off the couch without dying.
That's like a suicide.
It's like you have to, the people at the places are like, if you adopt a dog this small, you have to watch it at all times because they literally can die from jumping off of furniture.
Oh my God. That sounds like, no, look, Butter is very sturdy. but I just feel like don't get an adorable puppy and then feel like put out when people are like obsessed with it. Like,
right. Well, I feel like maybe I was just too emotionally involved right away and they were like hesitant because we didn't really know each other that well.
That's true. That's how I feel with Butter. I feel like things are moving very fast with Butter and I. Very fast.
Yeah.
Creepily fast.
Same with Dude. I really miss him. I think about him all the time.
Today said, Butter, I'm in love with you. Will you marry me? And I think that's what turned the owner off. The owner was like, what's happening here?
Do you have a picture?
No, but I will take a picture tomorrow when I hopefully run into Butter. And before that, I'm going to contact some kind of professional sketch artist who does like police sketches. And I'll describe Butter to them and then have them send you the photo.
Okay, that's really great. I love that.
Her nose is a little bit cuter.
You should take a picture, have the owner take a picture of you holding Butter and get somebody to paint that portrait.
Oh, yeah. Or when I'm holding it, I could just dash off with it.
That's also a good idea, but she knows where you live. And then you would just run into her all the time. You would have to move.
I'll move. Great. I'm going to start packing up my apartment tonight.
Well, get here. No one will look for you here in the center of nowhere.
Okay, great. I will come to you and we will raise Butter together as a family.
Great.
Okay, moving on. What else have you been doing?
I literally just minutes before I came here saw an article that said the Bernie meme is now porn.
Oh, well, and that's great for me.
Showed a picture of a woman wearing the mittens holding the mail sitting on a chair.
Oh, no, I didn't interpret it that way. I have a thing for Bernie.
I know, yeah. So, yeah. But, you know, maybe... I just don't understand what could happen from there, but I'm sure they managed to make it work.
Yeah. Well, the Bernie meme, you know.
Maybe it would be very funny if the woman playing Bernie then gets fucked by Joe Biden.
Like everybody else in America will. Zing! Take that, liberals.
You hear me, Ezra Klein?
That's right. Take that. What's his fucking name? The guy who writes Aaron. I was going to say Aaron Burr.
I meant Aaron Sorkin.
Might as well be the same person. Well, I have some news. Yesterday was my birthday, and it was pretty good
for a quarantine
birthday. I stayed home. I did cry a bit. And I mopped my floor, cleaned the house, kind of like a whatever day. It was snowing here yesterday. And then Becky and Adam had been quarrying for like a week and a half so they could come over for dinner. So we had dinner together. It was really cute.
Cute.
Yeah, we made like pizza, Negronis, and we had shrimp cocktail and tartare and cake. It was really fun.
That sounds super fun. Did you make all your own birthday dinner?
I did, yes, obviously. Not because I'm controlling, just because nobody offered to do anything differently.
Do you want to come over to my birthday where I cook your meal?
Exactly, yeah. And then Mary sent me a Tamagotchi in the mail.
Oh my God!
Isn't that cute?
That is very cute.
I know, I'm a pet owner now, for real. Tamagotchi.
Well, I wrapped your present, but it is still in my room. But it will leave. It will leave here.
Why don't you open it on the air? You can keep it.
Because it would be too crackly. No, your present for you. My present for you.
Aw, you're a sweetie pie, huh? Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Well, you haven't gotten it yet. You might hate it.
Yeah.
But I made you a beautiful card, and I sent you some items.
Oh my God, this is amazing. Well, thank you so much.
I haven't sent them to you. They're still in my room, but they're in a box.
I've been thinking about trying yoga. That's what that... Do you remember at Breezy, we one time found like an Us Weekly and it was like Ask Mike Tyson 25 questions and like one of the, or 25 facts that Mike Tyson tells us about himself. And one of them was, I've been thinking about trying yoga. And I always think of that every time someone's like, I've meant to do this, but like, I haven't yet.
I just like that when people are like, I'm thinking about trying it. Like,
thinking about trying yoga.
Considering trying it, but I'm not going to do it.
I'm thinking about biting off someone else's ear. I'm not sure if I'm going to do it.
About trying medical school as a four-year-old.
Oh, interesting. I'm thinking about stealing a dog in my neighborhood. And then wedding it in a ceremony.
Well, I think that you could let her keep him and still marry him, right?
That's true.
Like Woody Allen and Mia Farrow. You know, they never lived together.
Yeah, and look how it turned out for them. They're
so good.
They're happy, I think, still, right?
Best friends forever. Oh, yeah, for sure. They like hang out all the time.
Is that the worst like ending of a marriage ever, that like your husband ends up just marrying your daughter after you divorce?
I think that Elon Musk's dad did some sort of weird shit like that.
I find that hard to believe. He seems perfectly normal. I can't imagine he had any kind of weirdness in his upbringing.
Yeah, no. He definitely had. He seems like a straight arrow.
He seems like he has a Musk to him. And I'm not kidding. He looks like someone who has, even if his name wasn't Musk, I'd be like, this guy stinks. He's got Musk.
Speaking of Musk, I went on a bizarre internet rabbit hole search yesterday for Abercrombie Woods scent. Ooh. Do you remember that shit?
Of course. I was an Abercrombie 8 person, but I do remember Abercrombie Woods, of course. Abercrombie 8's good too, if you find that.
I don't even freaking know how in the hell, like, I literally read a sentence that was like, I love Abercrombie Woods or something like that. And I was like, holy shit, I think I like that smell. I wonder if it's still around. It's not still around. Hmm. They discontinued it in like 2001 or something. And then they brought it back in 2010. And I don't know. It's like that Gap grass scent that I love. The 90s.
I know.
All the scents of the 90s are gone forever, except for Dracar Noir.
Oh, yeah. Well, damn.
And like and, cool
and
water.
That's what you wear. Yeah, cool water. And like Charlie Girl.
Oh, I wish. I actually literally tried to find Charlie White at the CVS last time I was there. I'm regressing. Really? Like I said. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What about CK1?
Oh, I never really liked that. It wasn't my... You know what I wore in high school most of all was Clinique Happy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God. That does not mix well with BO. And the thing is, a lot of teenagers have BO, or a musk, if you will. And they wear Clinique Happy with it. And it's a thing. It's a vibe. It's, as the kids say, it's a vibe.
It's a vibe. Clinique Happy is also still around.
Yeah.
I don't think that it's my thing either. Really, Gap Grass was great. I like a vetiver, you know?
What's a vetiver?
Vetiver. It's an essential oil smell. It's in a lot of scents.
Well, excuse me.
Which also happens to be in Abercrombie Woods. I can almost picture how it smells, if you will.
Like the woods?
Yeah, well, I can picture how it looks. It looks like those old Abercrombie black and white catalogs that used to come by mail, even though I was never really rich enough to afford Abercrombie.
Yeah, I remember like there was a time where like Abercrombie was very cool when we were like kiddos and teens, and then like it became very uncool to be preppy like that. But mm-hmm. I would love to go back to like the year 1996 and like look at what an Abercrombie was like and what their stuff was like. I bet we would think it was cool again now.
No, because possibly the 90s stuff, when I really couldn't afford it, like when my cousins who were richer than me, they always had Abercrombie sweaters, and I've since been thrifting and like seen some vintage Abercrombie. So like the old school, like 90s, maybe even 80s Abercrombie was like well made and wool. Yeah. And like kind of Brooks Brothers-y. But then what I remember is my sister getting into their extraordinarily short skirts.
Oh,
they
yeah.
had, like, those really short skirts. And they I was had into those, that, like, too. Spaghetti strap tank tops with mm-hmm. the Abercrombie logo.
Yeah. I did that. And I did the tops that had the shelf bra in the tank top. And yes. very short skirts.
Oh,
very
yeah.
short. And very, very thin eyebrows. I mm-hmm. fucking might as well have just shaved my eyebrows off completely. I mean,
people did that.
I mean, really, my poor eyebrows, and they've never recovered. Never. Now they're all thin and patchy, and I have to draw them in. And that, my friends, is the circle of life.
It is a circle of life. I just watched The Lion King, and that's basically what the whole movie is about.
Yeah, the movie's about white, stupid white teens plucking all their eyebrows.
But I do have a real question about The Lion King, which I think I think our listeners want to hear, which is... Okay.
Go right
ahead. Why does Scar have a British accent? Like, why great question. Is he British? Did he go to boarding school, maybe?
No, because he's evil, and as we know, British people are evil.
Who plays him?
It's either, like, Sir Ian McKellen or, like, Alan Rickman. No. It's someone, or, like, it is. I'm telling you.
Ian Holm, but that's, like, The Hobbit. Hold on.
It's one of, like, the most, just, Jeremy Irons.
Jeremy Irons. I was like, it's not those,
Can you believe I remember that? Look at that memory on this one, and that is what Butter likes about me the most. My sharp as attack memory, even though I'm much, much older than him, I'm still very, very keen. I'm sharp. You can't get anything past me, Butter.
Yeah, he's like, I am subservient to you, alpha male.
Yeah, he really, like, appreciates my know-how, and he looks up to me, literally and metaphorically. Because he's very tiny. He's just a little moochie-moo. He's very cute. Should we talk about our topic?
Oh, yeah, we should talk about our topic.
I'm excited for this topic.
I would say this topic started off as wine, but then really veered wildly off of that track. So it's just sort of like under the umbrella of wine, but really I'm not talking about wine at all. I'm talking about malt liquor.
Amazing.
But what I'm talking about today is called champale, and not champale, as I always thought it was called.
Fake fancy. Champale. It's like people who say Target.
Champale.
Champale!
So, champale, if you guys are not familiar, and you most likely are not, because it's barely around anymore, it was a malt liquor that was sold to sort of be like champagne for the poor man. And you should just Google it, because there's so many amazing 70s ads for champale that you really need to have in your life, I think.
And I was looking at some of them today after you mentioned that was your topic, and they are fabulous.
Really, really great.
Really good.
Okay, so champale. We're going to go all over the place here. We're really just going to touch a little bit on malt liquor. I really think we should revisit it, because it's a fascinating, fascinating topic.
Great.
But it is a brand of malt liquor. Technically, it was introduced in 1939 in Trenton, New Jersey.
Hmm.
By the Metropolis Brewing Company. Essentially, the Depression really messed, obviously, with... Sorry, post-Depression messed... So brewers, after Prohibition and the Depression, brewers were like, we are in trouble, man. Shit is crazy. And liquor was doing much better than beer, and they just kind of weren't really having the heyday that they had enjoyed in the past, where people would literally just drink beer instead of water.
Right.
So they decided to... They also then, World War II came. They just couldn't catch a break. And there was rationing. So they invented... it is hilarious.
We think things are tough now.
Try being a brewer in 1942, man. So they invented malt liquor, which basically uses less malt, because their malt was rationed, everything. They didn't have enough metal to make bottle caps. They were really struggling.
Jesus. Mary and Joseph.
So they figured out a way to invent this thing called malt liquor. And in case you didn't know, because I didn't really know, what the hell is malt liquor?
I've always wondered.
It is a beer with more alcohol than traditional beer, 20% stronger than beer, as the crow flies. And to super duper summarize how it's made, enzymes are added to break down the complex sugars, which then makes the yeast have more ways to make more booze. It just makes it more alcoholic.
Okay.
And this is why I think we should revisit this, because malt liquor is actually not ice beer, which I thought it was. I thought it was like Steel Reserve and all that stuff. I thought that was the same thing, but it's not.
It's not like Bud Ice or Natty Ice, if you will.
Yeah, apparently not. It's also not Alco Pop, which is how they describe, like, you know, like what was that?
Zima.
Zima, yeah.
Zima.
It's also not hard seltzer like we have today, which I also thought it was that stuff. So we should really dive back into this and find out what is the freaking difference between all of these.
Very interesting.
But back to Champale. Oh, by the way, I got this information from a variety of sources. Wikipedia, Thrillist, Faithful Reader, which is a personal blog.
Oh, wow.
And the Trentonian, which is a local Trenton, New Jersey newspaper.
Your favorite. Your favorite local New Jersey newspaper.
So they came up with a way to make this malt liquor, and it was dry and bubbly, and so they marketed it as a champagne alternative, and they marketed it to wealthy white people. They're like, hey, guys, this is what you should be serving at your wealthy white gatherings. So they had, like, fancy names like Country Club, Sparkling Stout, University Club.
What?
And Champatite.
Are you sick and tired of that high-class champagne that tastes great and everybody likes? Well, try this malt liquor champagne to wet your Champatite.
Mm-hmm. Are you hungry for cheap champagne that's also not champagne? But really, nobody cared, basically. They really couldn't get it to take off. And the people, one of the brands marketed their malt liquor with an actual set of bridge cards because they wanted people to drink it while they played bridge. It just didn't take off.
Wow.
Then, in 1963, 2 years after Adolf Coors was kidnapped and murdered, the heir to the Coors fortune.
Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Interesting. I think I did Coors as a story, and I don't remember that. That seems like it would really have stuck out, though.
yeah, they kidnapped his ass and murdered him. Which is not the best way to get a ransom, I feel.
Absolutely. You gotta keep him alive, at least until you get the move. Did they get money?
I don't remember. There's a great documentary about it out there if you really want to dig into it.
Okay, great. Yeah.
I'm just here to talk about Champale, okay?
Okay. Pardonnez-moi. That's French for Champale.
So in 1963, a dude named Dawson Farber, who to me sounds like an asshole because his name's Dawson Farber, but what do you know? Maybe he's nice. He came up with Colt 45. And it actually, he wanted to advertise the fact that it had more alcohol than regular beer. And so that's why he put the little horsey on there. And I never realized that that's what that horse meant. So it wasn't that effective for me.
Hang on 1 second. Are horses like notorious drunkards? Like what's the significance of the horse?
I think it's like the horse is kicking his leg up. I don't know. They wanted to, oh, right. Because they wanted to say that it had a kick.
Oh, got it. They're like, this horse is wasted. You could be like this horse.
Notoriously drunk horse.
Sorry.
So he claims that the reason that he called it Colt 45 is because of Jerry Hill of the Baltimore Colts. His jersey was 45. Who knows if that was true? Probably not.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
The Baltimore Colts then went on to become the Indianapolis Colts, in case anyone is not aware of that. Go Colts. They didn't make it to the playoffs. R.I.P. So this line of marketing worked out better than the other line of marketing, but they were still marketing it to white people. Then civil rights happened, and the corporations realized that black people existed. And so once they realized that, someone told them that they were black people that lived in the world, in the United States of America, and they found out that for whatever reason, malt liquor sold more to black people than to other people. They don't really know why that was the case, but once they found that out, they started heavily marketing malt liquor to black people. Mm-hmm. So they had black people in ads. They had the Champali ads are like upper middle class people playing tennis and then also drinking champagne and then going out on the night in, you know, they're like, this is how you live life. Drink champagne.
Right. You can take it from the tennis court to the club.
To the courts of law.
There's just a lawyer drinking it. It's like a judge, honestly. Like, can we just make a bargain here?
And then Cole 45 famously used Billy Dee Williams post-Star Wars, so post-Lando Calrissian, and their ad was him sitting there smiling at you knowingly and saying, Cole 45, it works every time. Implying that if you feed a woman Cole 45, she will get so drunk that she will have sex with you. And it was...
Oh, that's tasteful.
Very successful in amping up sales of Colt 45.
And rape. And rapes.
non-consensual sex also was, like, way more popular after that.
Through the roof.
It's always been popular.
it's fucking terrible.
Champagne was marketed... like so. They wrote on this ad, it looks like champagne. It pours like champagne. I don't know what that means.
It tastes like shit. tastes like toilet bowl water.
It tastes like champagne, but it costs just pennies more than beer. Just pennies more.
Wow. Have you ever had champagne?
No, because it's actually really hard to find. So in its heyday, there were three kinds. There was pink, classic golden, and extra dry. Today, there's only extra dry and golden avail.
Okay. Wait, what was the champagne? Was that a kind of...
That was just a different kind of malt liquor that they...
Oh, got it.
Because there's... Basically, they're like, it's sort of champagne. It tastes like champagne, kind of.
Okay. I really wonder if anyone out there is listening... Congratulations for making it this far. Mm-hmm. But if anyone out there is listening has ever had champagne, please direct message us at Life's a Banquet podcast. I would love to hear what it tastes like.
I wish that I would have known about it when I was younger, because I bet I would have drank it when I was drinking like Mad Dog and Boone's Farm and shit. It's like, it sounds perfect for that time of life.
Totally. Or Andre. Did you ever have Andre? Oh
my God. Yeah. They would always, my college cohorts, the boys would always go... get 40s, and I would always get a whole bottle of Andre and drink that instead of a 40.
Samesies. We would do that too. We would sit in McCarran Park and get like Turkey's Nest, those like giant margaritas in the styrofoam cups from the Turkey's Nest, and like then when we were done with those, we'd use the cups to like have, we'd each pour like a whole bottle of Andre in and drink that, and that is why
diabetic stroke.
Yes, and that is how I died from diabetes and why I have no memory of anything that happened for, I don't know, 6 years of my life.
Okay, back to champagne. There were three flavors. There is also Jay-Z, Ghostface, and Beastie Boys have lyrics about champagne. They mentioned, Jay-Z and the Beastie Boys both specifically mentioned pink champagne. And I wish I would have known about it. Apparently working for the factory in Trenton, which then moved eventually, but was a really fun time. You could drink on the job.
Oh, yeah.
There was free champagne in the employee refrigerator, and you could just drink it while you worked, and it was totally fine with everyone. As long as you got your job done, it was a different time. It was the 60s.
But also the same time, because I feel like before COVID or whatever, like that was like... where office culture was going, like, come to WeWork, like, you can drink like beer out of our stupid beer keg all day and be really inappropriate in the workplace.
Yeah, but we won't give you benefits.
Right. No, you can't have health insurance. Right. But you can have IPA.
They did give you health insurance at Champagne.
Well, there you go.
And so, yeah, that's the whole story. I wanted to end my tale of champagne with some reviews.
Oh, thank the Lord.
That I found on untapped.com. Here we go. Wow, this is just awful. I don't know what to compare it to. Sweet apple cider mixed with all the Seagram's Escape flavors mixed together.
That's funny.
And another review. Tastes like prison hooch mixed with a dash of McDonald's apple pie from the seat crevice of a 77 Thunderbird.
That's clever. Did you write that?
No, I did not write that.
That seems like something you'd write in Spenny.
No, literally a 77 Thunderbird never crosses my mind. And this is a more real, like a real kind of review that they wrote. It's definite notes of champagne yeast, big notes of artificial grape. Not like Dimetap, but like actual grape, but artificial.
Oh, well, thank you.
I would try that. I'm intrigued. Apparently the extra dry kind of tastes like nothing, so kind of like probably like light beer, I'm assuming.
Sounds like it would give you a headache. I wonder how it pairs with caviar.
Well, the extra dry, yeah, I don't know, but the golden is very sweet, I think, so I don't know. It's probably more like Andre.
Right, it's for kids. It's for little babies, it's like for butter.
It's for butter.
It's for butter. Butter. Do you want a champagne golden? Because he's golden. He's butter. He's golden.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's the story of champagne.
Love
mostly
it.
Mostly it's for the beautiful advertisements, which no one can see on this podcast. So I'm going to ask you to do a little homework, listener.
Check those out. Single listener.
Also, listen to watch the commercials. They're kind of dumb, but that's how I learned that it's pronounced champagne and not champale. I think it should be champale.
Champale. It's Italian.
Italian. I'm off the baker.
Buon gusto. Spaghetti and meatballs. Okay, great. Should we take a break?
Yes, we should.
Okay, bye. Come back, please. Please, Lord, come back. Butter.
This episode is brought to you by Uptown Beer Society. They're a craft beer gang dedicated to making memorable collaborations with New York City brands and breweries owned by people of color. Their Bronx Culture series featured three beers made in collaboration with Gun Hill Brewery, inspired by the Bronx and Latinx culture. Uptown Beer Society works with underrepresented brewers and beer bar owners to highlight and celebrate cultural gems that make New York City so special. Learn more about their unique beers and where to find them when you follow them on Instagram at Uptown Beer Society.
And you've guessed it, we're back.
We are back.
We're better, and some might even say we're back and we're better than ever. So, Nicole, I'm going to tell you a story now about something that when I got into it, I thought I was going to be doing it as a joke because I thought this was a bad movie. but it's actually a good movie.
I told you.
It's good, which made it harder to make fun of, but it's still an interesting story. But like for some reason, the way where this movie like stayed in my mind, it was that like it was a good movie at the time, but now we would think it was like really lame.
Like American Beauty.
Yes, exactly. Like American Beauty. But it's not lame. It really holds up. The acting is great. The writing is good. You know, some of this director's other films, like they're good, but they're a little bit kind of just like cheesy middle-aged like white guy perspective. So I kind of thought that this was the same, but this is pretty good.
Are you going to tell us the other movies that he directed?
Yeah, he did like About Schmidt.
And with Jack Nicholson?
He did, yeah, with Jack Nicholson. And like, I think The Descendants, his name is Alexander Payne.
The guy. The Descendants, yeah. Okay.
Yeah,
I never saw About Schmidt.
Anyway, so I want to tell you about the movie Sideways, which is a delight, a true delight, fun to watch. It's great. So I'm just going to start off quickly with a little bit of the history of wine. Okay, everybody settle in. Everybody settle in. I'm just going to tell you a very small bit about the history of wine in America. So wine in America, at least from a colonization point of view, comes from Ponce de Leon, which reminds me of, did you ever play that game in school? Quactadilioso?
No, I've never even heard of that before.
Every time I hear Ponce de Leon, I think of Quactadilioso. It was like, the Quactadilioso goes quack, quack, quack. I'm sorry, I'm singing. From San Diego, ego, 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 ba da 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 da. Anyway, listener, if you've ever heard of the Quatrelioso, please call into the show. Anyway, Ponce de Leon arrives in Florida.
I always just think of the town, Ponce de Leon.
Ponce de Leon.
They named after him. They didn't already call it that before he got there.
Wouldn't that be interesting if he gets there and they're like, welcome to Ponce de Leon. And he's like, I'm Ponce de Leon. What a coincidence this is. Does Ponce anyone know Quatrelioso?
I don't know if that's what that means, but it sounds like it, you know?
I'm pouncing. Yeah. So Ponce de Leon, your favorite explorer, arrives in Florida in 1513.
This guy an explorer or is he a conquistador?
What is the difference?
I think one is bad and the other one is also bad. So
one is more rapey and pillagey than the other. Yeah. Anyway, he comes to America. He wants to make some wine, so he steals the grapes from the Native Americans. The grape they were using at the time was muscadine, and they talk about making American wine as early as 1565. Then,
wow, I did not know that.
I know. Then another very kind of contentious personality in American history, Thomas Jefferson.
Wait, attempted they're growing to wine in Florida?
In Florida. Isn't that interesting?
It's tropical climes. Okay, anyway, go on.
It's terrible to think about. I'm sure it was very disgusting. So Thomas Jefferson attempts to make, establish a winery and plant Vitis Vinifera Vineyards in Virginia. That is a tongue twister. Am I right? Okay, yeah. Look
and
at this.
He's probably like, you know who should work these vineyards? Slaves.
Exactly. It's not funny, but it's true. Thomas Jefferson was a shitbag. So anyway, I'm going to read the sentence again. He attempts to establish a winery and plant Vitis Vinifera Vineyards in Virginia in late 1700s and early 1800s.
Great.
Okay, great.
Roanoke.
Exactly. So here's a little bit about what people are drinking in America today. I will tell you something right now. A lot of fucking Franzia and a lot of Yellowtail and a lot of Barefoot wine. That's the most popular wine in America. It shouldn't surprise you from the things, you know, that this is what people are drinking, but also they're cheap, so whatever. It's fine. It's just yucky, but we could have a whole other discussion. Oh, yeah,
but you know,
you
have to think about American wine, how it had a bad reputation until, what, like the 80s, and then won some sort of award at some point, and they're like, well, it's just as good as European wine, and then everyone's like, let's make it like European wine and add all this gross shit to it.
Yeah. So this is what people are drinking a lot of, but I kind of almost want to make this a two-part episode because there's a very interesting story about both the Franzia, the House of Franzia, if you will, and also the Robert Mondavi estate. So there are things
that's so interesting.
Yeah, there's also more things I want
to
talk about.
If you're in a pinch and you have to drink one of those, the sparkling wine, Barefoot, it's fine.
Is it?
You just put some orange juice in there and you're golden, or some Aperol.
How do you feel about the Coppola wines?
Oh, the Sofia Coppola wines. I also only drink the sparkling wine. It's also 100% fine.
Yeah, it's not the good. Best.
It is veering into bad, but it's fine.
Yeah. Okay, so a new study, this is from The Week, by the way. A new study by Sonoma State University shows that Americans buy wine most frequently at wine and liquor stores, followed by grocery stores, and then at discount warehouses such as Costco, Target, or Walmart. The most common price point of American wine is between $10 and $15 a bottle. That's not surprising to drink at home, and $20 to $30 a bottle when dining out. However, when it comes to restaurants, 20% of the sample said they prefer to buy wine by the glass, and 16%, only 16% reported buying organic wine.
Of America.
Of Americans.
Yeah, but that's because people don't really know what the deal is with organic wine, I feel like.
Totally. So the most popular, do you know what the most popular grape variety in America is?
Malbec?
No.
Zinfandel?
No, that's not even in the top five. It's Chardonnay, folks. All those,
of course, right.
Dumb
those
housewives.
California oaks.
They're like, what do you have in, speaking of butter, my boyfriend, right. Yes. What do you have in a buttery, sweet butterscotch flavored wine? Oh, a really oaky Chardonnay from some kind of factory winemaker. I don't mean to make fun of people's tastes. I'm not trying to be a snob about this. I'm more thinking of people who, in my mind, are like rich and pretending to be sophisticated and have taste, but they really like really shitty buttery Chardonnay. And I mean, those people are hilarious. Is,
like, people just don't have an education around wine. So they're, you know, also, I think that part of the reason potentially why Chardonnay is such the most popular grape is I'm assuming that most people who drink wine in America are old boomer ladies.
Exactly. That is what exactly what I'm saying. And I'm not making fun of anyone who's drinking cheap wine because that's what they can afford and that's what they like. That's fine. I'm more taking a stab at those rich ladies who pretend to have a knowledge of wine but really like Chardonnay.
Yeah, I just feel like making fun of people for wine, it's not something I can get down with because...
Me neither. I'm not into it. Only these specific people. You have to be rich.
If you're an evil, satanic, wealthy Karen and you drink that, then I'll make fun of you. But
that's otherwise, the people I'm pointing at.
Yeah. Otherwise, it's fine. There's a local vineyard. There's a local vineyard here that only sells sweet wine that my parents buy often. And, you know, they just don't know any better.
Totally. And I think that, like, the thing that is not cool about wine and what makes people, I think, scared about wine and scared about talking about wine is that they're not going to know something or people are going to, like, judge them on their taste. And people, you should just, like, drink whatever you like and whatever is fun. However,
also, my parents don't even like, I've tried to introduce them to the other better wines out there and they're just not interested because they want that sweet wine. It's right. More palatable for them and that's what they like. So who cares?
Drink what you like. Who gives a shit? However, again, if you are a rich, shitty Karen pretending that you know about wine and guzzling oaky Chardonnay, then, you know, I mean, here's looking at you. Go, please, perish. So the most popular grape is Chardonnay, followed by Cabernet Sauvignon, Pinot Grigio, Merlot, otherwise known as Merlot, and number five is Pinot Noir.
Damn it, I didn't get any of those.
Mm-mm. So, okay, the movie Sideways comes out in 2004. It's got a 97% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's starring Sandra Oh, Paul Giamatti, Virginia Madsen, and Thomas Hayden Church, otherwise known as the Hawkeye. Yes, God bless him. The Hawkeye from Wings. Yes. I feel like he was one of my first crushes in life.
Same.
He's strange looking, but so attractive.
Well, he didn't look that way in the 80s during Wings, or the early 90s, whenever Wings was on.
Yeah, he almost has like rubbery features that like look like he's been molded from rubber.
Yeah, I think that you really get a sense of that in the movie, but in Wings, he looks good.
I think he looks good in this movie, too. I'm into him, and he just has, like, a cool attitude. He was nominated for an Academy Award for this movie, which I think is awesome. But Paul Giamatti was not, interestingly enough.
Well, anyway, he makes it look so easy. He makes it look like he's playing himself in every movie.
He does. I love Paul Giamatti. I used to see him. He's, like, the celebrity I've probably run into the very most in my life. I used to see him all the time, random places all over the city. It's very weird. I've probably seen him, like, 75 times.
Did you ever ask him out on a date?
No. I didn't. I didn't want to scare him off. He didn't seem like he'd want that. I think he's happily married. Anyway, the movie grossed $109 million, and it's based on a novel by Rex Pickett. Now, interestingly enough, I tried to look out, like, what year did this Rex Pickett novel come out? And everywhere it says that the novel came out in 2004, which doesn't make sense if the movie came out in 2004.
Wild.
I know, it's very confusing. So I'm going to start you off with some snippets from an article written about this movie called Age to Perfection: Alexander Payne's Sideways is Worth More Than a Glance. Now, this article written by Kenneth Turan came out in the LA Times April 1st, 2020.
I don't know why. It's because everybody is regressing, man.
I don't know why, and it wasn't like an article. I looked everywhere in this article for being like, oh, like, it's aged well, like, the movie's aged well, like, this was a great, like, you should rewatch it. It's like a current review of it. So he says, exactly written, directed with a surgeon's precision, and transcendently acted, Sideways brings emotional reality to a consistently amusing character comedy, making it something to be cherished like a delicate Santa Ynez Valley wines that are the story's vivid backdrop. Do you want me to read it again?
No. I loved it.
Exactly written, directed with a surgeon. No. I'm just kidding.
Is you don't have any more research? Is that why you have to reread this?
That's it. That's all the research I did. For wine is Miles's... Okay, so Miles is Paul Giamatti's character. So the movie is about these two friends, Miles, played by Paul Giamatti, and then Thomas Hayden Church's character. And they... Like, Thomas Hayden Church's character is getting married, like, the next week. So they kind of go on a two-man bachelor party. Paul Giamatti's, like just a divorcee, and Thomas Hayden Church is like an actor who's washed up and he's doing like voiceover commercials or whatever. And so they go to get away to the San Ynez Valley, which I think is like just south of where like regular wine country is. And it wasn't very popular until then. And they're like famous for making a lot of Pinot Noir. And so I'll go on later about the sideways effect about what happened with Pinot Noir and Merlot after the movie. Came out. But anyway, so the article goes on to say, for wine is Miles's consuming passion, the great enthusiasm of his life. Listening to him talk wine is an education in unto itself. And he caresses grapes on the vine as if they were his true best friends. Though the women in Sideways, which sidebar are played by the amazing Sandra Oh and the incredible Virginia Madsen, though the women in Sideways are not given as much screen time as the men, surprising to no one, they're written with equal skill and are essential to the film's success. This is especially true of Maya, a character who carries the burden of being its most humane voice. Madsen's ability to bring delicacy, sincerity, and soulful strength and caring to grounded individual gives the film an emotional integrity in which it would be immeasurably less effective without.
Interesting.
I just found that piece of writing to be like really clunky and like like if we didn't have this compassionate woman, which is the only thing a woman could be, this movie would just be about wine.
Yeah, but Virginia Madsen was so hot back in the day.
She really was. I feel
like they really like dowdy her up in that movie in Sideways.
They kind of do, and like, but Sandra Oh's character is so cool. She like rides a motorcycle. She's like this fun mom, single mom who smokes pot. Then she beats Thomas Hayden Church almost to death with the helmet of her motorcycle helmet when she finds out that he's getting married next week. But anyway, the movie is very fun, and it just like follows them through like wine tasting and depression and philandering and like all these kind of, it's like, it's not about much, nothing crazy happens, but it is actually directed with the precision of a surgeon. Isn't that right, Butter? Butter's here.
I think that there is something to say about movies like that. It is definitely like the perspective of the aging white man, which is troubling, but there's something about Paul Giamatti that sort of softens that and just kind of makes it a little bit more palatable.
Yeah, and it's very, like, I mean, it's so early 2000s, like, in all the food that they eat and the wine that they're drinking and, like, you know, there's, like, big hunks of... Oh, so anyway, some of the food stuff, which I thought was interesting, they go to this restaurant called The Hitching Post. Well, that's where Virginia Madsen works. She works at this restaurant called The Hitching Post. I'm sorry, The Hitching Post 2, which is in Buellton, California. And I looked at their menu now, and I just wanted to quick talk about what they have on their menu. It's, like, but this kind of, like... rounds out, it like kind of summarizes what the vibe of the movie is just in like reading this menu. So there, some of their appetizers, they have roasted garlic, slow roasted to a soft and smooth texture so it can be spread on toast with herbs, roasted peppers, balsamic, and olive oil.
So they just give you the hunk of roasted garlic and make you smear it all
they
over
make
stuff?
You do it yourself. Yes. They also have
your
grilled
fingers
corn,
are gonna be so smelly.
Smelly fingers. Grilled corn quesadillas. Two flour tortillas filled with jack cheese, cheddar cheese, spicy corn salsa, and grilled and served with fresh salsa.
Oh, yeah. I would eat that.
I know. There's a lot of... Okay. Like, but these are the kinds of things they're doing. And then they have, like, a fresh natural chicken breast. The highest quality from CA. Oak grilled. Very juicy with a gorgeous flavor. $29.
They oak grill just a single chicken breast?
Single chicken breast.
Like on a Chardonnay oak barrel?
Exactly. And then they have like New Zealand rack of lamb. Tender, distinct, yet mild flavor. Marinated in mild Cajun and garlic spices, comma, then grilled. 10 ounces, $47 American. This place.
I love that they're like, we want people who like lamb to like this because we say distinct, but we want people who are scared of lamb to also like this, so we say mild.
I know, it's for everyone who can afford a $47 entree. So anyway, that kind of just for me, like just hearing about the kind of food in there, like summarizes how like the movie feels in a certain way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, like yes. I feel like in 2004, when I was so very young and didn't even know what wine was, would have been like, oh yeah, I'm like, I respect this wine guy. But now I'm just like, no.
Exactly. Now you're like, ooh. Okay.
He's wearing exclusively polo shirts.
Oh my God, the fashion. And so Thomas Hayden Church, I like wrote actually a note in my book when I was watching this. He wears like baggy chinos and then a really baggy buttoned all the way up to the top and all the way down to the bottom, oversized like button down shirt, untucked.
Wait, Thomas Hayden Church does or Paul Giamatti?
Yes, Thomas Hayden Church.
They also, it's just so like, bad. Paul Giamatti looks so schlubby that like the fact that Virginia Madsen would ever deign to sleep with him is troubling to me.
It is. And also, like, not only is he schlubby, but he's, like, grumpy and, like, always really drunk and depressed. I mean, he does have something endearing about him, but it's, like, I don't know. Typical.
Yeah. It's just, like, I know. I had a whole, like, thesis. I was, like, so sick of, like, the middle-aged white man getting a renaissance. And I was really angry about it for a while. And now I just, like, don't care. But there was a lot of, like, middle-aged comedians coming back and talking about their divorces and somehow getting, you know, back in the good graces of America. And I'm like, you don't deserve it. You're old. You're shitty. You are mean to your
you're
wife.
You're wearing a polo shirt. You have no butt.
So sad and lonely, but you deserve everything that you got, you dumb piece of shit. And get out of here, Marc Maron.
Oh, no. I love Marc Maron.
Sorry.
I love Marc Maron. Okay, look, so there was this thing that happened after called the sideways effect, and it was a real thing that was studied by universities and wine growers, in which
did you major in it?
I majored in the sideways effect, and let me tell you, this was a difficult degree to get.
I love that you majored in it, but you never saw the film.
I had never, no, why would I watch it? I'm studying it at Harvard. Right, butter? So anyway, like, he said that Paul Giamatti was, like, very against Merlot, and after the movie, since the movie was so popular, like, Merlot's sales went way down, and Pinot Noir, which had never been super popular in America until that point, went way up, and he, like, they destroyed Merlot, like, the whole Merlot industry with this single movie. Although it still is more popular than Pinot Noir, according to whatever article I read.
Oh, poor American Pinot Noir. I don't even know what to say about this. I just want to repeat that Virginia Madsen, the star of Candyman, would never have slept with Paul Giamatti, okay?
I know she is the star of Candyman. I was, like, trying to remember, like, what else has she been in? Okay, so a couple other things that I just want to, like, tell you randomly about the movie. There's a scene in the beginning when Paul Giamatti and Thomas Hayden Church go to, like, Paul Giamatti's mom's house, and he, like, steals money from her, and they eat dinner. Right. They both got food poisoning from the meal that they ate in the movie. They were, like, having diarrhea and throwing up.
Also, how old are they if they portray men in their 50s?
I think they're supposed to be, now they're, like, both in their 60s, and that was 15 years ago. I think they're supposed to be, like, 35. Although, whenever I see movies about people who are supposed to be 35 who look like 45, I get upset because I'm now 37.
Yeah, well, I just watched last, I didn't watch all of it, please don't judge me, but my parents had it on. The movie where Matthew McConaughey failure to launch.
Oh, love it. That movie is terrible. I've watched that several times with SJP.
Yes.
Oh, he just won't launch. He will not launch.
But he's 35 years old in that, supposedly. And I'm just like, nobody that's in this movie is 35 years old.
I mean, let's hope not. Because he's looked like he's exactly like 43 for his entire life, as far
like,
as I can tell.
A man in a movie is allowed to be 35, I think, or even 40 or 50, but a woman could never even be 30 in a movie.
No.
She's not, like, literally not allowed.
heavens no. So here's a fun fact. So Thomas Hayden Church is with his in-laws. That's where Paul Giamatti comes to pick him up. And the house that they were at was on Rockingham Place, like across the street from O.J. Simpson's house, where he lived at the time of the murders.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. In 2004?
Yeah. 2004. So 10 years after the murders. But yeah, I don't know why they chose that as this as the location, but they did. Thomas Hayden Church did a scene, because there's a nude scene in the movie where he comes running from like screwing some waitress, and he comes running back to the house. And so he did the audition naked. Do you see
full frontal?
Peen? You don't see any peen. He's covering his peen with his hands, which I feel is the biggest disappointment of this whole movie, honestly.
Damn it.
And I did see this movie when it came out. Like, but I didn't remember anything about it.
Okay. Because of your drinking so much Andre Spumante.
I was so fucked up on Andre that I don't remember a goddamn thing about this movie. But I'm glad I watched it again, because it is, as I mentioned before, a delight. And Butter and I loved it. So the actors had to drink wine substitutes for most of it, although some one scene when they were like all at dinner together, they did drink, well, at least Paul Giamatti drank real wine and he got completely wasted.
Excuse me, they were drinking wine substitutes such as champagne?
No, they were drinking like grape juice and said they made them all throw up. There's a lot of barfing in this movie.
Ew.
And then I just want to tell you a couple of fun facts about some of the actors. Paul Giamatti's dad was the man who was responsible for having Pete Rose removed from Major League Baseball.
Yeah, he's like a commissioner or something. He's like the commish.
He's the commish. Oh my God, what was that? Dennis Farina? The commish?
Mm-mm. No, I don't. Let's look it up.
Some other old white man with a belly and a flat butt. Flat butt syndrome.
Who is this guy?
It's Mike, some kind of...
Mike Post is the composer of the commish.
Oh, thank the Lord we figured that out. I've been wondering who composed the commish.
Michael Chiklis.
Oh, yes, Michael Chiklis. Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, yeah. And also Great Gum Chiklis.
Yep, Chiklis.
Okay, Sandra Oh was married to Alexander Payne for a couple years. From 2003 to 2006. And apparently they're still friends.
Really?
Virginia Madsen is the sister of Michael Madsen.
Yes.
And she is born on September 11th, 2001. No so she way. She was only 3 when this movie was made.
So I'm pretty sure that Sideways came out before Grey's Anatomy, right? Before Sandra was on Grey's Anatomy? I don't know
anything about Grey's Anatomy. I've never seen a single episode.
Well, I've seen every single episode.
Do you love it?
I do love it. It's amazing television trash. I love it. Adore it.
Hmm. Interesting.
But yeah. Oh, let's see. Okay. Yeah. It was 2005 is when it premiered. So.
Oh, okay. So it was after. And then Thomas Hayden Church made his on-screen debut in a made-for-television film called Protect and Surf. And that's my story of Sideways, a movie about a man looking for answers in the bottom of a Pinot Noir bottle.
Also, why did he hate Merlot? I don't remember. Did he say why?
I think because, like, in the movie, he's just meant to be this kind of contrarian. A pseudo-intellectual. And, like, someone who's, like, you know, trying to know a lot about wine and flex. Like, he has, like, this crazy collection, but he's actually so broke that he's stealing money from his, like, old mother and, like, spending it all on wine and trying to be part of like a scene. I feel, you know, he's like looking for something, like literally he is actually looking for something. He's very lost and very angry and sad. And, you know, in a way an alcoholic, but in another way, like, I think like wanting to fit in somehow through being a part of something, which like wine culture.
Sure.
And we should all feel really, really bad for him.
Oh, yeah. I mean, Paul Giamatti, that's, like, when he started to become, like, didn't American Splendor come out, like, around that time?
Uh-huh. Yeah. He's an amazing actor. One of the best actors of our time. And he was also, I was reading about him, he's like, I prefer to play supporting roles, which I think is really cool.
I mean, he probably just said that after he never got a leading role.
He only got supporting roles. I mean, this was a lead role. He's gotten a bunch of lead roles. I mean, American Splendor was a lead role, too.
That's true. Okay, fine. You love it. Paul Giamatti.
Call me. I know you're listening. Do you want to talk about our top three today, our top three favorite wines?
Yes.
What are yours?
My top three favorite wines are sparkling wine, white wine, and red wine.
Oh, wow. That's so specific.
Right now I'm actually drinking a Cremant from the Loire Valley. It's delicious. Really, my three favorite wines are just different kinds of sparkling wine. I prefer to mostly just drink sparkling wine until it starts giving me a headache.
I know, that's the thing. I love sparkling wine, but lately even more so, and especially with like sparkling natural wines, really, really gives me a headache. I got very specific. I have three that I love, and like these aren't my three, like these are my top three favorites of all time. Although my number one might be my definite favorite of all time. But I love from a really great producer called Catanoche, which we used to have a lot of their wines at Bruce, and you can still find them around everywhere. They're from the Emilia Romana. And they had a wine called, I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong, but I think it was pronounced Caracciole. It's spelled Q-U-E-R-C-I-O-L-E. And it's 100% Spergola, and it's like sparkling, very dry, delicious. I love that wine. It's one
that
of
wine
my
is very good.
All-time faves, and they're lovely. I was lucky enough to get to go visit them on a trip, on a wine trip, and they're very sweet. And it's very, very small production, and they're nice humans. I also love number two, Philippe Bonnard, the 100% Plussard. And that's a producer from the Jura. And it's like a very juicy, like umptuous, like, I don't know, just kind of chuggable red. But actually, it's, you know, it's quite nice. Maybe you don't want to chug it too fast, but I love that wine.
Glue glue.
Delicious, delicious, delicious. And my number one favorite ever, I think, for real, is the Frank Cornelison Susucaro.
I do, of course, love that wine. It's a crowd pleaser.
It really is. It's raspberry, it's juicy, it's delicious. It's like, it's a classic. And it's always a little different each year, but it's kind of like a dark rosé. And it's delicious. It's really great. Wacky wine producer from Sicily. That Frank Cornelison. So those are three natural wines that I really like. And I also love Ed Hardy's wine.
And I love Sofia Coppola's wine.
Did I ever tell you that, like, my mom had gotten a bottle? I know I've told this story at some point on the podcast. I don't know why. But my mom had gotten a bottle of Ed Hardy wine from someone as, like, a Christmas present.
Ooh.
And, like, it was just sitting there. And, like, my mom and Rob don't know who Ed Hardy is, so they didn't even realize how disgusting this was. I'm sorry. I shouldn't say disgusting. How it was just, you know, if you like it and you're listening, that's fine. they didn't realize what it was exactly. But so I brought
it
in.
Did you open it up?
Yes, I brought it into Brucey, and I told our wine director at the time, I was like, hey, let's do a taste test. I just got this new wine. I want you to tell me if you can tell what grape is in it. And I poured him the Ed Hardy wine, and he was like, interesting. I don't know. It's got a lot of watermelon to it. Like, is it like Passerena? And I was like, no, it's Ed Hardy. And he just drank it, you dummy.
A lot of watermelon. Gross.
Yeah, I was like, yeah, I thought you got that right. Tastes like suntan lotion and herpes.
Yeah. Aw, poor Ed Hardy. He should have a middle-aged man movie made about him.
I would love to know about the story of Ed Hardy. Maybe we should do that for an episode and figure out how to tie it into food. But I think I'm open to doing another wine episode next week because there's a lot to unpack here.
You do the wine and I'll do the malt liquor and we'll have a grand old time.
Oh my God. Okay, great.
Also, I just saw, speaking of people that have life stories on television, there's a The Rock origin series.
Are you serious? You know that I love The Rock more than anything.
I'm not sure how I feel about it based on the preview that I saw. Because I watch network TV now with my parents. So
interesting.
I see all kinds of shit I would never see. I also watch movies with commercial breaks. I made my parents watch The Martian last night, the Matt Damon movie where he's stuck on Mars.
Oh, he should have stayed there, honestly. I can't stand Matt Damon. Sorry.
If left to my own devices, I would be in control of the remote at all times, and I'm pretty, like, intense about that, but I've been, you know, I live with a family of 3,000, so I have to be a little bit more democratic about it. So I still have to be in control of the remote, but I try to find, you know, fun for the whole family movies. And it was fun to watch that movie with my dad, who had never seen it, because it is like an intense, like, what's gonna happen next type of movie. And a lot of times you're like rolling your eyes because you're like, oh my God, this is so dumb. But it was fun to watch with the fam.
I've never seen it. I don't like space, and I don't really like Matt Damon. Oh, that's not fair to say. I don't really hate many actors. I don't hate him. He's not like a Jesse Eisenberg to me, but something about him, he looks like he has a musk. Right, Better?
You know, I like, Matt Damon is so bland, but the one thing about him that I do like is that he married a regular person, like a teacher, and they've been married for a long time.
I appreciate that about him as too. I appreciate that about him as too. That's what I just said.
I think it's funny that we're talking about Matt Damon, and we talked about Ben Affleck last week because he broke up with Ana de Armas.
And not only did he break up with her, he literally broke her. He broke her cardboard cutout and shoved her in the trash. Imagine what happened to the real woman. What a fucking weirdo.
Yeah, so I'm not Ben Affleck. His face is too long.
What's up? Yes, his face is way too long for his own good. And what is up with his, like, since this is a food podcast, let's talk about Ben Affleck's obsession with Dunkin' Donuts. Like, he's really into it. He, like, eats it all. It's his, like, calling card. Not that there's anything wrong with Dunkin' Donuts, but in every picture I see of him lately, he's scowling and carrying, like, a comically, like, large amount of wobbling Dunkin' Donuts coffees.
Well, he used to have a bunch of pictures of him scowling and holding a cigarette, so maybe he's quitting smoking, and that was his thing. There was a time when, I can't remember what actor it was, but they were really into Qdoba, or no, what's the, damn it, there's another Mexican chain like that, but it's not Qdoba, whatever. A Qdoba-like place, and an actor was constantly seen there, and it became like a thing, but this is like 10 years ago, so. I just like, when you're in LA, and you drive a car, and it's COVID, you just go to, you know, also Ben Affleck's in his 50s, like, he goes to Dunkin' Donuts, of course he does.
Those are his donut years.
And he's just being photographed a lot more than he normally would because he was dating a hot new young lady.
Right. Maybe that's how he's dealing with the stress of the breakup, with donuts. Packing his face full of mini donuts.
He's quitting smoking. This is my guess.
Interesting. Well, Ben, please let us know. Obviously, you're listening. Sorry we've been talking such shit about you and your best friend.
You and your best friend, allegedly, from 30 years ago.
Yeah. If you guys are still together, please let us know. Anyway, well, this was a fun episode, wasn't it?
You know, I had fun.
Did you really? Did you feel like you were right there in the Santa Ynez Valley when I was talking about Sideways?
No, I did not. But I do like talking about celebrities. So it was fun to talk about Virginia Madsen and Sandra Oh. God bless her. I'm glad that she had a career after she left Grey's Anatomy.
She's great. Did you like hearing about my new boyfriend, Butter? Are you happy for me?
I love hearing about Butter. Yes.
What do you think I should do when I see him tomorrow, if I see him again? Because I know that Butter's owner is really getting suspicious of our love. And I'm wondering if I should... What's that?
You need a photo.
Yeah, I'm going to snap a photo of him. Okay, that's it. Next step is photo.
My sister in Chicago, they have a downstairs neighbor that had a new puppy. Now he's bigger, but his name was Pancake.
Aww.
And so when I stayed at my sister's apartment when they were out of town, I would go downstairs and I would be like, oh my God, Pancake, I've heard so much about you. And the owner was like, what? Because I didn't know anything about the owner or even the owner's name.
That's hilarious.
But I knew so much about Pancake because my sister's dog is very cute, but she's an asshole. So she like terrorizes the new puppy downstairs. And so my sister had told me all about this, and I'm like, Pancake, hi, it's me, Shannon's sister.
Shannon's sister.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Yesterday I was telling Becky that, like, I really want to get a puppy. And she's like, what would you name it? And I was like, I'm not sure. She's like, you should name it Becky. So I'm like, wouldn't that be hilarious if I got a dog and named it Becky after our friend Becky?
We would have to name it fucking Becky.
Fucking Becky, the goddamn dog.
God bless Becky, though. We love you, Becky. We know you don't listen to the podcast. You only listen to one episode.
She would never listen to the podcast.
She did listen.
Yeah, she listened to one episode. She's like, whatever. I feel like, you know, like I could just talk to you guys for free. I'm like, the podcast is also free.
Yeah, don't forget that. You're listening to this for free.
That's why it sucks so much. Okay, we love you guys so much. Thank you very much for listening. And hasta la pasta.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Life's Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.